Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. On this Prelude Friday for Memorial Day weekend 2023, we'll get the latest TV and sports TV observations from Queens Chronicle columnist Lloyd Carroll. Mr. C joins me next. From there, a snapshot of what's happening in Estrella Media, one of the rising forces in Spanish language television. The overview later this hour from Chief Criminal Officer Steve Mandela. Also ahead, our classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. I present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, along with Podbay.fm, Podchaser, and Pod Paradise, and other leading podcast destinations. This just in, Memorial Day weekend is around the corner, and tomorrow will be televised. Thank you for joining us and kicking off your wonderful holiday weekend with a program all about TV's current and future. 71 degrees at the top of the hour here in the Big Apple. Wonderful guests coming away over the next hour or so. And we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone and give us a call. The number you use is 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or TuneIn Radio. Our chat room is open for business, too, and we'd love to have you be part of it. It's SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the promo is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or TuneIn stream. Follow the instructions to be live with you. 71 degrees at the top of the hour. One late-breaking news note that we just found out about in the last half hour or so. Justin Simien, the director of Dear White People, the television series, as well as the hit movie, has his company called Culture Machine on a GoFundMe page to stay alive. Why? Because Simien's overall deal with Paramount is in jeopardy, and it's been stopped for the moment because of the Writers Guild strike. So what is he doing? He put together a GoFundMe page several days ago. He is trying to raise $400,000 for his organization to keep them going through the summer or whenever the Writers Guild strike ends. Currently, he has raised over $40,000, and we will keep you posted on that story. And now joining me live from Monmouth, New Jersey, is the popular columnist for the Queens Chronicle. He covers TV. He covers sports TV. He's been on the program before, and he's always great. Mr. Lloyd Carroll. Lloyd, welcome in.
Well, thank you, Sam. Appreciate the big welcome. I didn't realize you are the king of podcast media, so very impressive.
Oh, thank you, thank you. Well, it's people like, it's guests like you that make the show go and get us on podcast sites all over the place.
Appreciate it.
You were at the Sports Emmy Awards Monday night. What was it like to be there? And I've always wondered why the Sports Emmys are not televised, because I would think that somebody would want to, some network would love to give it a shot.
You know, Simon, I think years ago, Fox's first game, not FS1, I think there was another Fox Sports cable, you would remember the one they had, the Best Damn Sports Show, and Tom Arnold. I think they tried one year, and it fizzled. You're 100% right. Particularly in this age of streaming, all right, if you don't want to put it on the main linear cable, there's so many cable streaming outlets, you would think that someone would want to pick this up. I honestly don't know. It's certainly star-studded enough. I mean, maybe not in terms of entertainment celebrities, but certainly in terms of athletes and household names. They had, obviously, Shaquille O'Neal was there. A lot of people from Queens. It worked out for my column for the Queens Chronicle. Kenny Smith, Ian Eagle was there, and Mike Tirico. So I got three Queens guys under one roof, so I couldn't have set that one up better. Chris Collinsworth was there. So the funny thing, I do believe that if this was televised somewhere, they'd even get more athlete celebrities and probably more entertainment celebrities. So it's a very good question, one that's perplexing. I've asked Paul Pelletieri, that who handles media relations for the Fernatus and that handles the Sports Emmys, yeah, and he's been stumped as well. It's one of those things that just seems to fall through the cracks, and I just don't have an answer for it. But it was fun being there. Chris Collinsworth is always a good guy to chat with. I don't want to say interview, but it was kind of informal during the cocktail hour. And I asked him, because Chris was an all-pro receiver with the Cincinnati Bengals, had a talk show on WLW in Cincinnati, still lives in Cincinnati. He's very identified with the city. And I asked him, now that the Cincinnati Bengals, who for years were like the New York Jets, just an also-ran never were in the playoffs, so really wasn't much of an issue. But now that they've become, with quarterback Joe Burrow, basically a Super Bowl contender now every year, if he is concerned in the world of social media that we're living in, that he would be labeled a homer for the Cincinnati Bengals, if that crossed his mind. And he admitted it does. But then he said, Lloyd, the funny thing is when I'm back in Cincinnati, they hate me because I'm not a Bengals cheerleader. So you're kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't. I thought it was kind of a cute Collinsworth story.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about the winners? Just mention a few of them. NFL Monday Night Football won for Best Live Sports Series. NBC Universal's coverage of the Winter Olympic Games last year won Best Live Sports Special. Mike Green won Best Play-by-Play Person. I think Mike Tirico won Best Studio Host. On the Spanish language side, Telemundo's coverage of the World Cup last year won Best Live Sports Event, and Andres Cantu won his latest Emmy for Play-by-Play.
Yeah, I mean, the problem, whenever there's an Olympic year, it's almost de rigueur that the Olympics win the hardware. So that's not a surprise. And the same thing with the World Cup. High-profile events tend to bring out the awards. All those people who are nominated for play-by-play, that the award Mike Green won, are certainly quality people. I mean, I joked, it was hard in the press room to actually hear who won and who didn't. So when I saw Ian Eagle out in the hallway of the Frederick Rose Hall, I asked him if he won. He goes, "Now Mike Green from Westchester won." And he took it in good stride. I was joking with him. We should get Sidney Powell to be his lawyer and recount the votes, impound the machines. He was laughing. I mean, typical eye. Look, anyone who's nominated at that level is going to be, you can make an argument. Nobody would be upset if any of them won. You could go eeny, meeny, miny, moe, and any of them could have won the Emmy. And nobody would be upset.
You and I both went last week to the Upfront events all over New York. And it was very interesting how, because of the Writers Guild strike, because of the picketing, because a lot of series creators, showrunners, and stars who would normally be at these events to encourage the advertising public, the press, and the public at large to watch NBC Universal shows or Disney shows, whatever, in the fall, that they turned a lot to sports. For example, at the Disney presentation, which was over at the beautiful Javits North Center, and it really is a sensational place, at the
right.
Javits Center, on one end of it, that ESPN took up half of the two-hour event.
Yeah, well, that ESPN, which is 80% owned by Disney, it made sense. Basically, it was news, reality, and you're right, the lion's share went to sports, which for someone who writes a weekly sports column, that was a gift to me, but certainly unexpected. I mean, even a week before that, but once the Writers Guild strike occurred, I guess they had no choice. I'm glad they went through with it. It was awkward. I mean, to be fair, every executive that was hosting, so to speak, the upfront presentation of their respective network acknowledged the Writers Guild, hoping that it gets resolved. There was no snarkiness. So, I think everybody handled it very – a tough situation very diplomatically. It's not a surprise. ESPN made a lot of news that week. It's funny, the day that they held at Javits was, I think, the Pat McAfee deal became official, like hours earlier, at least they made it official, and there was McAfee on stage. And it obviously is controversial, not so much because Pat is a controversial guy. He's not a Barstool Sports kind of personality. He's humorous, speaks a little bit in body language, not looking to really be offend. And it was, like you, a very successful podcaster. And it was able to parlay that into a seven-figure deal with ESPN. They're going to put him on, I believe, in afternoons. He's probably going to bump poor Max Kellerman's show. But what was kind of, I'll tell you, so it was controversial, the fact that ESPN is laying off a lot of people, part of the whole Disney lift. So it seemed a bit incongruous that they're announcing a big ticket signing while layoffs are occurring, including some people who have been with that network a long time. I know that Mike Soltis, who has been a communications pro, has been, up front that after 43 years, June 30th is going to be his last day there. It reminds me of the old days when companies, and again, I'm putting my CPA ad on here, would talk about the difference between a capital budget and an operating budget. The operating budget was kind of your day-to-day operations, let's say to run the subway, you know, how to pay the motorman and to keep things going on a daily basis, where the capital budget was the big-ticket projects like new trains, station renovations, et cetera. And I think that's how ESPN is looking at it. They're trying to basically nickel and dime on the operation side of things, but yet spending big ticket on the capital budget items, like Pat McAfee.
Boyd Carroll is the sports and TV columnist for the Queens Chronicle, which is also available on site, by the way, at www.qchron.com. He joins us live from Monmouth, New Jersey, this half hour on Smart Be Televised, the Friday before Memorial Day weekend 2023. Simon Abbott, I'm with you live from New Haven, New York, 71 degrees at the top of the hour. I want to hear from you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We have three episodes coming your way after the weekend, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. That includes the first 2 days of June. And coming up on our next episode on Tuesday afternoon, you'll meet a married couple that's now getting into television with a video podcast that's running on some smart TV devices and sets, and also, just now, on late night on Optimum, the cable system used to be known as Altice and Cablevision Systems. Their names are Samantha and Jeffrey Drucker, a very interesting pair. You'll hear more about them Tuesday. And 1 week from today, among our guests, we'll have the co-founder and chief operating officer of Blavity, the African-American-owned television network and media company. Jeff Nelson, who's the co-founder, will be with us. That's all coming up Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, all at our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Lloyd, for you, what was the best moment of the upfront, the best moment that you got out of seeing all these TV projects, these TV happenings?
Well, you know, it's funny. I'm not sure this qualifies as the best, but probably the most memorable for myself, and I think you might concur on this, Simon, was the revival of the CW last Thursday when they held a morning briefing with media. And it was so refreshing in so many different ways. You know, very often during upfront week, it seems as if advertisers are the sole focus, and in fact, media is a key part of this because for ad buyers to buy a show, they have viewers have to be aware of that show, and we certainly help in that process. But it was nice to see Brad Schwartz, who was the former president of Pop TV, kind of reintroduce the new CW, in that it's not, as Brad joked, it's not your granddaughter's CW. No more very few teen dramas out of any, few superheroes. They're really trying to be an old-school, wide-reach broadcast network, including sports, comedies, et cetera. And they want to do it, I think, seven nights a week. I know that even under Mark Pedowitz, under the old CW banner, they were trying to expand into that area. So I thought that was really the best moment. And because a lot of their shows are Canadian imports, they probably will be impacted minimally, at least initially, by the Writers Guild strike. I enjoyed seeing Leah Thompson and a very good Canadian actress, Stacey Farber, in the Spencer Sisters. That certainly looked promising. So they may actually get out of the starting gate pretty well come the fall while the big boys are kind of stumbling around. I'm just curious to get your thoughts on it.
I thought it was a terrific event, and I just want to let you know that I'm going to be coming out shortly with a Media Village column about something else that the CW is doing when they roll out this new schedule this fall and into 2024. I thought it was a terrific event, and I really believe that this is what Paramount should have done when they decided not to do an upfront event for CBS and Paramount Plus, et cetera, which is to replace that with a press event that would talk about Paramount Plus, CBS, Nickelodeon, BET, because aside from the sessions they did with advertisers, nobody knows what the heck they're doing with Paramount Plus or Nickelodeon or BET or MTV or VH1. I thought they were the big losers, by the way, at the upfront event. They should have done what CW did on Thursday, which was really, really outstanding. And I thought that both Dennis Miller, the president of the CW, formerly of TNT, not the Dennis Miller, the comedian, et cetera, talk show host, and Brad Schwartz, who I've known before, and has been on this program before when he was with Pop TV, I think they have some very exciting plans for the CW, the theme nights, what they're doing with Live Golf. And also, I asked about this new 7 p.m. sports half hour that is being done in the prime access or early time period up against Jeopardy, Wheel of Fortune, Entertainment Tonight, and so forth by Channel 11, the CW affiliate here in New York. It'll be interesting to see whether the CW adopts that, if it works, either to other markets on a syndicated level, local level, or they decide to do it as a wraparound for Live Golf and other sports events on that channel.
I think you're onto something. For those who are out of the area, out of the New York metropolitan area, this it's called the show you're referring to at 7 p.m. on the on Channel 11, which is the local Nexstar owned and operated. It's called New York Sports Nation Nightly, and has Mark Malusis, a veteran radio sports talk guy, and Nelson Figueroa, who was on the MLB Network, SNY, and a former Mets pitcher, actually a surprisingly good pitcher who unfortunately didn't get the – was on some bad teams. I think if he'd been on some better teams, he probably would have pitched longer. But certainly incredible personalities from Brooklyn, a true New York guy, a delightful person really to get to know. I predict that every Nexstar owned and operated is going to follow this model. In L.A., is it KTLA? Is that their owned and operated one?
Yeah.
I think the I could see that easily happening. For those in the New York area, and Simon, you're going to remember this, watching New York Sports Station Nightly, it reminds me of the old Channel 5 Sports Extra, you know, with Bill Mazur and Lee Leonard, and may they rest in peace, and Jerry Eisenberg, who's still with us. It was revolutionary in its time to have a whole half hour devoted to sports. Now, every network, every local affiliate does this Sunday night, you know, for like 11:30 or midnight or whatever. But to be able to do it 5 days a week, to have a half-hour television show, it's revolutionary, yet it's so obvious, given the love of sports, how important it is for in so many different areas. You're almost surprised nobody's done it first. And you have 10 million. Think about this. How many entertainment half-hour shows do we see from Extra Access, Hollywood Entertainment, Tonight? It goes on and on, if you want to throw TMZ in there, so to speak. And yet, there hasn't been a half-hour sports show locally. It seems like maybe they were intimidated by things ESPN has done with SportsCenter, that they've ceded sports to ESPN, when in fact, a lot of people want to have it local. Nothing against ESPN, but it's like radio. For years, ESPN Radio languished behind the old CBS, now Odyssey, in terms of ratings, is people wanted the local touch. And I think Nexstar sees this and will adopt this model in all their owned and operated stations. That's just a prediction from yours truly.
Yeah. Keep your eye on this. For me, I thought that the big sports moment was at Disney's event, and that was the appearance of DeMar Hamlin, the Buffalo Bills defensive player who suffered the almost fatal cardiac arrest on a Monday Night Football game. He was introduced by Joe Buck and Troy Aikman, who covered that game, that interesting Monday night. Standing ovation. I thought we had to say it was great. He comes across as a very well-grounded person. I thought, to me, that was one of the highlights of not only Disney's event, but also of the upfront in terms of sports. In terms of what I thought was the worst moment, it was NBC Universal's Olympic tribute, where a wonderful montage of Olympic events that was Monday morning of that event was ruined by a hard rock band that nobody knew about, played awful, couldn't hear a single word they said, and I was in the front, near the front row, and then there was nobody out there afterward to talk about the Olympics. It seems to showcase once again what the problem with one of the big problems with the Olympics is in terms of getting viewership and getting people to care about it. Molly Solomon and the executive producer, who won the Emmy, by the way, this past Monday night, she does a fantastic job with the Olympics. The coverage is fantastic, but the marketing promotion aspect of it is awful. And I have to ask, who asked for this? Who hired this band? I think whoever at NBC Universal who suggested this as a way to showcase that montage rather than a John Williams piece of music or a song like Whitney Houston's One Moment in Time to be reprimanded or fired.
probably will be. You know, it's funny. I got there, to be honest, a little late. I got there just in time for Reba McEntire there. But I did see Mark Lazarus at the Telemundo presentation later that day. I asked him just about the Olympics. I think you're right. He really said, hey, you know, we didn't really talk about it that much. I think he was embarrassed. So I think what you're saying, not again, I was unaware of the Rock Band. So I think what you're saying has certain credence on that. I have to say, probably the most humorous moment of Upfront Week came with NBC. The question is, who got the loudest ovation? And it was pretty muted because of the writer's strike, and as you point out, there were not a lot of household names for advertisers. You know, Reba McEntire did a very nice job on the Bobby Gentry song, she performed Fancy, and Nick Jonas, you know, closed the show. But the biggest hand I think I heard all week was reserved for Steve Kornacki, of all people, you know, the NBC News election guru. He was a rock star. Speaking of rock, he was the rock star at that event.
Yeah, he was, and so was Ted, the, you know, Seth MacFarlane animal from the movie, which is going to become the Peacock
right.
series soon, who did this wonderful opening number, maybe the best opening number of the entire week, called Ads. Wonderfully done, very funny, where he either on film or tape, is kicking his paws while this wonderful group of chorus line dancers were doing their thing at Race Day Music Hall with the wonderful high kick and high stepping, wonderful neon skyline of Radio City in the background. By the way, Race Day Music Hall, the best place to hold any event. The technical expertise, the work is just fantastic. To me, that was the best opening moment.
I would agree with you. Javits Center was quite good, but I have to admit, Simon, it's kind of weird not having Carnegie Hall be part of Upfront Week, and that we, you can tell our friends at Paramount that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I hope that Paramount realizes that it was a blunder. If they want to talk to agencies, you know, behind the scenes, fine. But if you're going to not do an event where press and the public can find out about what you're doing, then do what the CW did. Do a press conference. In fact, for many years, CBS did do a press conference over breakfast.
You're 100% right.
On a Wednesday before they did their event on Wednesday night.
Locks with Les was a time-honored tradition. The funny part, Simon, is the Paramountization of CBS has been kind of tragic in a lot of ways, because CBS used to really, out of all the networks, they valued media relations with, you know, people like us, print journalists. They would always welcome us, whether it be NFL Media Day, they'd have a holiday media party, and they would have, as you point out, Locks Less, and they were always made sure that they could accommodate media at their upfront presentation. A lot of networks almost only just have a handful of the media biggies and leave the little guys out, and they worked very hard to make sure everybody was included. Everybody was helping to sell their product was welcomed. It's really a shame what's gone on with the corporate culture since the Viacomization, Paramountization of CBS. So that's my soapbox on that.
Yeah. Lloyd Carroll from the Queen's Chronicle is our guest this half hour on the Marby Televised. If you have a question or comment on many minutes with Lloyd, make the call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up shortly, classic trivia question. We have some wonderful prizes in play, including the brand new book, Sons of Baseball, by former USA Network and TV publicist Mark Graff, who was on our show 2 weeks ago. And coming up in our next half hour, we're going to go live to, well, between Connecticut and where I live in Nueva York. Steve Mandela, the chief revenue officer, one of the best Spanish language TV executives around from Estrella Media, will be joining us for our final half hour of the day. That's all coming up, so stay with us. You know, one of these is very interesting is how both Netflix and Disney Plus and mega content services were showcased at these events. I thought at the Disney event, I thought Rita Ferro, the head of Disney ad sales, one of the best in the business, really underplayed both Disney Plus and ESPN Plus. Nothing about ESPN Plus, which just celebrated 5 years on the air last month. But also, I thought Disney Plus did not say what's going on with the ad-supported tier, what's coming up in terms of new programming. On the other side of the flip, you had Netflix, which had to, because of the writer's strike and concern about protests, go from having a live presentation at the Paris Theater they own here in the U.S. to a virtual presentation. And the virtual presentation did exactly what they should have done. They said, we have 5 million people, you know, catching us around the world who have the ad-supported tier. Here's what's coming up. And the stock has been jumping like crazy. It's now running around like $350, $360 a share. So it's like Netflix did the right thing in terms of talking about their ad-supported tier, where it's at. Disney Plus did not.
Yeah, I didn't. I knew Netflix canceled their in-person presentation because of the Writers Guild strike. Paris Theater is a small venue anyway. Hopefully next year, assuming life as we expect to be back to normal between hopefully the pandemic long in the rearview mirror and the Writers Guild strike settled, they need to get a real venue. I mean, I was not welcomed at that, and they didn't even send me a link for the virtual. So I don't know about how their media relations is generally. I don't have that relationship. We'll see if they work at it in the future. I wish them well. I'll tell you one thing. Netflix is getting the brunt of, I think, the Writers Guild picket action. And it's funny. I remember being at a Television Critics Association in Beverly Hills before the pandemic, and John Landgraf, the president of FX, gave a speech. It was very kind of on the economics of the industry and really started attacking Netflix and, as you said, the mega streamers for putting too much content out there. And at first I thought, you know what, John's, he's just trying to knock a competitor that's making him spend more money on product. In retrospect, he may have hit the nail on the head, because this may be one of the reasons we may not have had a Writers Guild strike if it weren't for Netflix, because apparently the way payment goes to writers on streaming services is different than the linear model that you and I grew up with, and that is a problem. And I can actually be sympathetic to the writers on this. I thought for sure that when you had more content being made, this would be a godsend to writers. But in fact, it's been – Landgraf is right. It's been the opposite for a lot of people involved in the industry.
And it's interesting that John was not part of the Disney presentation. That was a surprise to me.
There's a lot of things. By the way, did you hear the letters ABC mentioned at the Disney presentation? Because I sure didn't.
Very little. Very, very little. Except in sizzle reels.
But in terms of Rita Farrow, she didn't mention the letters. I mean, I understand there's a Writers Guild strike. You're not sure. But you can talk about the shows that are coming back. Maybe you don't have all the new shows, but certainly the ones like the Will Trents, play them up. I see no problem with that. Advertisers want to hear that.
They did mention Abbott because of the Peabody Award that they won, which unfortunately they will not have a ceremony because of the writer's strike. And a lot of awards like the Daytime Emmys, we just learned that the Ted Lasso salute that was coming up next week at the Paley Center for Media, the TV Academy Honors, both of them gone because of the writer's strike. I really hope people get back to the bargaining table, both the writers and the producers. We need to see some action. It's time.
Well, at least we'll have a Tony Awards ceremony, so I'm happy about that, even though it's kind of like more of a ceasefire or a truce. It's not like the Writers Guild gave them a waiver, but they basically promised not to pick it, to allow them to do it. If, I guess, as long as they don't read off cue cards, they can let the show go on.
I don't know if the show is going on. They really have not made that clear, whether the which is scheduled for June 11th, by the way.
From what I heard, now again, Simon, you may prove right on this. I thought it was a go, but, you know, like, it's kind of like our debt ceiling. It's not a go until it's a go. So we're going to, like Biden and McCarthy in the debt ceiling. We'll see what happens. It may come down to literally the last minute.
It very well could. Before you go, Lloyd, what sports and television are you looking forward to seeing this summer or early fall, whether it's Women's World Cup, whether it's the lacrosse championships coming up on ESPN.
You know,
absolutely.
I'm looking forward to seeing the National Lacrosse League finals. It's going to be on ESPN2, I think, coming up this weekend. You talk about one of the great sports that never has taken off because electronic media has not covered it, print media hasn't. But if you've ever been to a lacrosse match, particularly national, it's exciting. To me, it's right up there with the National Hockey League in terms of nonstop action and whatnot. So if that can get some exposure, that would help. You know, I did ask Dennis Miller if they're looking for, you know, Saturday, Sunday programming. Now, of course, going up against the NFL in the fall is can be a fool's errand. But you know what? Alternative programming has always been there. it'll be interesting to see if they try to compete with sports that may not get a lot of exposure. I'm hoping they will.
Yeah, there are a lot of leagues that could be part of it. And by the way, maybe is it time to have like a sports anthology show back? You know, a multi-hour like ABC's Wide World of Sports, NBC Sports
Wide
World,
of Sports,
CBS
the American
Sports Spectacular.
Sportsman. You know, I could see them doing something like that, and that's the kind of counter-programming that could work. Absolutely. I do miss that. I'm sure Jim McKay is smiling somewhere above just hearing us talk about it.
Mm-hmm. For sure. He was one of the great ones. One of the great,
absolutely.
You can still see his work on YouTube.
There you go. And Kurt Gowdy as well.
Same with Jack Whittaker also, who, by the way, was a host.
Pride of Philadelphia, so yes. Boy, we don't make legends like that anymore. And, you know, one final thought about you asking about sports Emmys, and we're missing that kind of mythology series. I call it erudite programming. I asked Brian Gumbel, who won the Emmy for, you know, I'm sorry, he won a Lifetime Achievement Emmy, you know, and his Real Sports on HBO is probably the last place you can get, I consider, erudite sports conversation, in-depth journalism. You don't have the sports reporters anymore in ESPN, no more Outside the Lines. I was chatting with Jeremy Schapp about this. It's really a disgrace what has gone on. And to me, I think if it's promoted properly, a very lucrative form of programming if it's promoted properly. And I don't think it has.
Yeah, agreed. CW, pay attention. It could be a real goldmine for you. If you want to see and hear more of Mr. Carroll, here's where you go online with the Queen's Chronicle. It's www.qchrons.com, www.qchron.com. Great reading and great, and if you hear him anywhere, great listening or watching too. Lloyd, thank you so much for coming on. Have a wonderful Memorial Day weekend. It's been a pleasure all the way. Have you back soon.
Thank you, Simon. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Take care. Enjoy. Lloyd Carroll from the Queen's Chronicle joining us live from Monmouth, New Jersey. When we come back, Steve Mandela from Estrella Media after we pause, after the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogsofray.com, speaker.com, tune.com. Together, reaching over 80 million listeners around the world every month and growing. On Blog Talk Radio, check out the Richard Miller Report. He'll have a lot to say this Memorial Day weekend about everything from the NBA and NHL Stanley Cup playoffs to Major League Baseball. And goodness knows much, much more in the world of sport. The Richard Miller Report, that's tomorrow, noon Eastern, high 9 a.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, best be charged 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised. Tomorrow I'm with you live from New York on this Friday before Memorial Day weekend 2023. Thanks for being along for the ride, 71 degrees at the top of the hour. And now joining us live, en route from Connecticut to New York, one of the best executives in the world of Spanish language television. He's the chief revenue officer of Estrella Media, Steve Mandela. Steve, good to have you with us.
Hello, Simon. Good to be with you.
Steve, Estrella is your company is really growing by leaps and bounds. It's no longer just a broadcast network anymore. What's it like to be part of an organization that now has multiple networks and broadcast, cable, also smart TV sets and devices?
And it's a thrill, and it's invigorating. I've always loved being a part of organizations that are growing and succeeding, and also some missteps, probably inevitably in that growth trajectory. And Estrella is absolutely there. You know, it started about 3 years ago when Estrella came out of bankruptcy, and HPS Partners took a position with 100% of the debt and the equity in the company. And brought in a new management team led by Peter Markham that tried to take a media company that was really based in legacy media and turn it into something new based upon the skills and talents that were within the company. So I love it. I'm enjoying it.
And one of the things that Estrella is doing is not only enveloping smart TV set and smart device distribution, which seems to be the way that a lot of networks are now going. But it's also carving some territory in formats you would not necessarily associate with Spanish language television. One of the ways you're doing that is with what is the only Spanish language game show channel, which I believe the content is produced in the United States. That's Estrella Games.
It is. You know, I'll start with the headline here is we all love metrics. We would actually expect that by 2025, perhaps, certainly by 2026, our national digital revenue will likely exceed our national linear revenue. And that's a credit to the growth that we've had in all of our digital platforms. We made a bet, and I say we, I take ownership over it, although it was really Peter Markham and Renee Santella, who leads our digital business, about 2.5 years ago, made a bet on fast channels. And fast channels are the, no pun intended, the fastest growing part of the digital video economy today. And we operate 4 fast channels. And I think it was certainly provident that we did that. But I will also say that fast channels and the environment around that are a little bit like the early days of cable. Grabbing shelf space and being able to hang on to that shelf space is a really important thing. So operating 4 fast channels all in Spanish, it really puts us in a great position. Because fast channels, while people aren't perhaps quite as familiar with fast channels, it's just like and feels just like big linear television that's distributed on smart TVs.
But with a show of games, you know, you are doing in Spanish what Game Show Network is doing with English, which is you're developing original game shows and you're giving them a platform.
You're absolutely right. And it plays upon a core competency that Estrella has had for a long time, and that is reality-based, game-oriented, competition-oriented content. We're just about in the next 2 weeks to wrap up season 27 of our talent game show called Tengo Talento, Mucho Talento, season 27. And that show, along with a number of others that we've been producing and have in our library, is what populates that game show network. It's really, there are over 25,000 hours of content in the Estrella library that have gone to work across all of our fast channels. And as you say, particularly with game shows, news is also a big winner for us in the fast area.
Steve Mandela is the Chief Revenue and Local Media Officer for Estrella Media, which has both Estrella TV, which is on many broadcast stations around the country, but also several what they call free ad-supported television or fast channels, including Estrella TV, Estrella News, Estrella Games, and more. And Steve joins us live en route from Connecticut to Nueva York this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Tom, how about with you live from New York, 71 degrees at the bottom of the hour. Let's hear from you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up at the top of the hour, classic trivia question of the week. Last time we're offering it this week, and you could win a bunch of wonderful prizes if you are the first with the correct answer to our question. So stay tuned for that near the top of the hour. Steve, it's very interesting that your organization has a 24-hour news service. Canela Media has a 24/7 news service. Telemundo, we used to work at, now has a 24/7 news service. And CNN Espanol, which has been there for quite a long time, just announced that they're going to actually drop their service. They're actually going to not have it anymore in the United States. They're going to move their offices to their news staff to Mexico City. It looks like if it's going to be around, it's going to be on mobile. Do you find it ironic that we're seeing this explosion in the last couple of years of Spanish-language all-news channels, and yet one of the ones that pioneered the whole idea is cutting it down?
I do find it ironic, and I find it saddening in a lot of ways. I would also take a step back to the 30,000-foot picture. As the Hispanic community continues to grow and is 17% of the U.S. population, it's also growing in its political influence. And we all know that, you know, not to wax too poetic here, but in a democracy, serving news to an audience to be informed is critically important. So the more sources of news available to this public, the better off we all are. And so I do find it sad that a service is going away, but I'm very proud of what we do with Estrella News, not only in our fast channel, but also all of our local stations, both radio and TV, as well as our network. I think that what I see going on today, particularly you look at companies like Americano Media, that are serving a different portion of the population, but with news content, news and opinion content. And so I love the idea that there are startups in there, despite the fact that something like the CNN service is going away. And I just think that there's continued call for it. While advertisers will certainly hesitate about getting too involved in news and how news stories that they have no control over may reflect on their brand, it's great content. And I liken it to sports. Sports and news are the two things that drive live audiences and a sense of engagement and brand awareness that's so important. So I'm thrilled that we've got it. I'm thrilled that it's growing. And I'm confident that as a community, we can continue to serve the news and information needs of this growing population.
What do you think gives your 24/7 service, as well as your local and national newscasts, the edge over others? Is it what you cover? Is it who's covering it? What would you say is the edge for Strella?
I think the recipe for success is got a lot of ingredients to it. But I think that, as you mentioned, I think it's about the personalities who are presenting it, the credibility that they have, the storytelling that they can do to help understand what the issues are that are facing the community. But I will say that for Estrella in particular, we've been highly focused on the Mexican-American population. And so the news that are in those communities that are dominated by Mexican-Americans in the U.S., as well as news from Mexico. We have a partnership with Multimedios in Mexico to help supply news content coming out of Mexico. Mexicans are the largest portion of the Hispanic population in the U.S., and one of the fastest growing still. So we think that we've got a bit of a niche there in that while we cover all news, it's with a particular focus for the Mexican-American community.
Your flagship or mothership channel, Estrella TV, is going to be launching a very unique 2-hour block of primetime programming soon. It's going to be live. The first hour is going to be interactive, talk, issue-oriented, fun stuff, roundtable. And then the second hour is going to do something which is quite unique and sort of harkens back in a way to TV of the 50s. It's a comedy variety program where you're going to have sketches and comedy and bits from both Los Angeles, where you have your main studio space, and Mexico City. Why the decision to go this route in terms of trying a live 2-hour block at prime time?
Well, first, I think that we see that it has interest from the research that we've done with the viewing public. But secondly, we think that it's strategically valuable because it is true counter-programming. Where our competitors are generally dominated by scripted drama, this gives a definite alternative. We also looked at it, and we have a core competency about producing that content that feels buzzworthy and around the water cooler and is either live or live on tape for that production. That's the history of Estrella, whether it's with Tonight, con Omar Chaparro, or Tengo Talento, or Cien Latinos de Jaron. We've got a long, multi-decade history of that. So it felt appropriate to us. It felt on brand. You know, I remember, Simon, years ago when I was working with Lauren Zelaznik at NBCU, and for anyone who knows Lauren, she was truly gifted. And one of the things that Lauren used to talk about was the media companies and particularly the television networks that would continue to succeed are those that have both image and content that pairs with that brand. You know, and her identity was always around Bravo, which I worked on for a number of years, and Bravo certainly exemplifies that. But I think Estrella does too. There's a brand that's there. Our viewers kind of know and feel that brand, which are always sort of a more feel than being able to exactly enunciate, and the content pairs with it. So these two new shows that we're talking about, Lavadero, which is the kind of news, entertainment, gossip show that is the first of the 2-hour block, and the second one called Tonight will be hosted both in U.S. and Mexico, and again, live, topically oriented. So they're on brand for us, too, and I think I'm really proud of that, and I think it sets us up well. But I will tell you, I see that trend all over the place because the idea of the economics behind scripted content today is very difficult, and we see the further difficulties with the writer's strike right now. where any media company that is relying upon content that is somehow affected by the writer's strike, they're a little untethered at the moment and trying to figure out what their place is. We love the idea that we're not at all affected by the writer's strike. And I think that, you know, the big expansion of reality and competition content a number of years ago was born really out of the last writer's strike, when all of the networks at the time went about trying to develop those reality and competition shows that weren't reliant upon writers at the time. So I'm sure that we're going to see even more of that manifesting if this writer's strike is protracted.
And incidentally, I believe both of these new one-hour shows are going to have a live studio audience, but they're also going to give the home audience an opportunity to participate in different
ways.
They will.
Most likely via social media, not via traditional call-in format. But it's just, again, another part of our brand of making it the people's channel, where they're directly involved in topics and part of the dialogue. And, you know, I think that one of the features that's really special is this idea of Nacho Lozano, who is a very well-known, credible, and terrifically engaging journalist in Mexico, will be broadcasting his comments and his part of the show from Mexico, while Angelica Valle is a well-known female talent and a star in her own right, will be from here in the U.S. So it's another twist on the show and another thing to make it interesting, with two really distinct personalities also representing different geographies. And the reality is, you know, our community lives in both worlds. There's that part of being 100% American and 100% Latino at the same time. So this show, we think, reflects that same sensibility.
Also, because the program is live, it could become sort of the Spanish-language version of one of the most interesting, innovative shows back in the 1960s called That Was the Week That Was, which was every Friday night on NBC. It first started in England, but then went to NBC, where you had this sort of musical satire review of the week's news. And it was done with all sorts of everything from live sketches to animation to puppetry, so on and so forth. And it had a great following on NBC for a year and a half on Friday nights. So with this show, it sort of sounds like it could be like the Spanish language That Was the Week That Was, because you have the opportunity through comedy, through satire, different ways to react to the day's news.
Yeah, I think in both of these shows, what we hope to be able to achieve, and so far we think we're getting there, but our ambition is to be not just about news and information. That's what Estrella News is for. That's what both our broadcast and fast channel. This is meant to be, you know, lighter news, information, and entertainment at the same time, very much like the NBC show was in the 60s. And so there will be lighter moments, and there will be heavier moments in there. But it'll be a way for our audience, our community, to kind of wrap up their day in prime time in a lighter, escapist fashion.
Steve Mandela from Estrella Media is our guest this half hour, live en route from Connecticut to New York on Tomorrow I'll Be Televised. Tom Nava with you live from the Big Apple, 71 degrees, coming to the top of the hour. You have a question or comment remaining minutes with Steve, make the call, 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Well, three episodes for you next week after the holiday weekend. And coming up on our first one of the week on Tuesday, that's May 30th, you'll meet a couple by the name of Samantha and Jeffrey Drucker. They are doing a video podcast series now playing on some smart TV sets and devices, and just started in late night on Optimum TV. That's the cable system from formerly Altice, formerly Cablevision Systems here in the New York area, and it could go elsewhere too. Samantha and Jeffrey Drucker, you'll meet them. I think you'll find a very fun couple. That's Tuesday right here on Tomorrow I'll Be Televised. And coming up 1 week from today, that's June 2nd, we'll have, among others, Jeff Nelson. He's the co-founder and chief operating officer of Blavity, which runs the African-American-owned network Blavity TV. It's all coming up next week, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, right here, exclusively, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, on Tomorrow I'll Be Televised. Going back to the situation with drama series, or with scripted series, Steve, one of the issues that is still around in Spanish, and I've been covering the Spanish language medium for over 40 years, has been how do we get an ongoing pipeline of weekly or daily or nightly dramatic series or comedies or hybrid scripted series produced in the United States with Latino talent in the United States, writers, directors, and so on and so forth. It used to be the case was we don't have the advertising support for it. Now it looks like there is a lot of advertising support, and it's fast language advertising is growing by leaps and bounds. We're now starting to see a lot of the secondary and advertisers who have just come into the medium overall. Now they're getting involved with Spanish language television. What is the issue here? Why can't we get more television, dramatic television or comedy produced in the United States?
Well, I think the first thing is we've got to acknowledge the success of the dramatic format that is novellas. Novellas were, you know, a little bit of a history lesson, but novellas were literally developed from novels. And many of those novels were written by incredibly successful, well-known authors, but in some cases 50, 60, 70 years ago. And those novels have been updated and refreshed over the course of time. There's multiple novels that have been produced as different novellas. And I think that because they have worked, Simon, there's not been a sense from the media companies that there was a need. They were effective as they were. They were also IP that those media companies owned that they could refresh and recreate about every 10 years or so. And I think, you know, again, it's one of the reasons that as media that is targeted to the Spanish language viewer and user and listener has expanded over time, what we've seen is there's a greater diversity of content. So you talk about the idea that you've watched this industry for 40 years. If you go back 40 years ago, it was all novellas. It was some movies, but all novellas. And today you do see a greater diversity of content genres there. And that's one of the reasons that I am so proud of Australia, because I think we do a good job of providing greater spectrum and diversity of content. But I just think that, frankly, there's not been a need. You can blame it on a lot of things, and I've heard people talk about, well, there's not been the writing talent that's there. There's not been the economics to be able to support drama, ongoing dramas and series, because they're incredibly expensive to do. But the reality is, the novella has largely worked. It's been in steady decline, and I think that market forces will continue to direct media companies to find better alternatives like we have. If you go back, Estrella's founding was really based around our own productions going back two decades, and that wasn't necessarily out of choice. It was out of necessity. Estrella had nowhere to turn to find great acquired content that was in Spanish, because the major producers, particularly Televisa and TV Azteca, were locked up. So it was out of necessity that Estrella had to invent what they were going to do for content. I think that necessity and market forces are going to facilitate that happening again with those types of series that you're talking about. And I think that you'll likely see it first in AVOD, where there's a desire to put innovative content there to attract younger, more engaged viewers and users.
And that's why I think it's very important to watch what's happening, for example, with mega content sort of like VIX, which, by the way, just had a deal with Roku. Because one would think that would be, given what Televisa and Univision can do, or what other folks might do getting into the field, that they could make the Peacock, for example, has T+, which has done some English language and Spanish language shows, although very few in the U.S. You hope that in this next batch around they'll be able to do it. And by the way, I want to follow up on a comment you made. I think one of the biggest moves has been unscripted television. You look, for example, what you're doing, what Telemundo has done with the 7 to 9 time period, with competition shows like Top Chef VIP, like Exotone U.S., and so forth, where it's done in the United States, and it's working. They have carved a whole new niche. It used to be, you know, telenovelas, you know, 7 to 10, 7 to 11 o'clock, and now it's 7 to 9. It's become competition or game show, game show time at Telemundo. Unimas with Amarados, the live rom-com show, or live dating show, which just over 1,000 episodes.
I was actually going to point to Amarados. I worked on that project when Randy Falco was the CEO of Univision and Jessica Rodriguez was running content. Talking about that show and making a bet on that show seemed quite risky at the time, but it was out of a desire, a necessity to counter-program. And that show continues to carve out a really important place in the lineup of that network.
Yeah. So if it can be done with unscripted, it's certainly personal thought can be done with scripted. And there certainly is the production facilities, whether it's New York, whether it's Miami, whether it's Albuquerque, New Mexico, Chicago, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
And incidentally, personal thought, it's time for a Spanish language weekly or nightly drama series to be done in New York. We have Ana Castillo, who's head of the mayor's office of entertainment. It's time. It's time for somebody to make that move. I think it could work. It was done properly. Betty in Nueva York, I think, was a great start. Although it was mostly done in Miami, they had a lot of initial episode footage in New York. And I thought it really went very well. So it's time. It's time for a full commitment to Spanish language television, scripted TV in New York, which is coming back big from the pandemic. Steve, what do you think is next for Estrella Media? Is it creating a Netflix-like service? Is it creating another channel? What do you see in the cards for Estrella going forward?
Well, I think at the moment we're very focused, as you talked about, this two-hour block, 7 to 9 p.m. Monday through Friday. And the successful marketing and launch of those shows. We're also continuing to focus on fast channels that we think there's an opportunity, and we've identified content for a fifth fast channel that we hope to launch in 2024. And I think it's also around AVOD. You know, AVOD is a sector of the marketplace that very few have actually found a way to make economically successful yet. We see everyone struggling with AVOD. Yet for us, we've taken a really measured approach in AVOD, particularly around customer acquisition, that our AVOD business is profitable. It is a matter of how do we continue to scale it in a rational, methodical way. But I think that those three areas in the video business, again, AVOD, FAST, and the launch of these two shows, are our priorities probably for the next year. I will say that, you know, we also operate a really successful audio business. We have very strong stations in L.A., Dallas, and Houston that are all targeted to the Spanish-speaking community. And I don't know if you know, but we just had the data from Nielsen that demonstrated that Que Buena, KBUE, our station in L.A., is the highest-rated regional Mexican music station in the entire country. And regional Mexican music is the most important format in Spanish language and still growing. I don't know if you know it, but the top three songs on Spotify's international playlist right now are all in Spanish. And that's fairly typical of what we've seen on Spotify too. So we love the audio business, and we think it's, in terms of both terrestrial and digital audio, is one where we continue to put a lot of effort and grow.
And one final thought.
If you think about it, I'll just add this about the audio business, Simon, if I may. You know, you think about audio, and I've talked to a lot of advertisers about this over the years. For those of us a little bit older, you know, DJs were the original personalities in our lives. And really, DJs were nothing more than what we would call influencers today in so many ways. And so all of our radio stations are built around the personalities of our DJs. And it's a really important distinction when we talk about the importance and role of audio, that it's not just about a playlist. It's about the personalities of those DJs that many of us grew up with and we remember so fondly that are still a big part of our community.
By the way, is podcasting in Estrella's future? And also, didn't you have a series on Estrella TV, I think it was a comedy, that had one of the most popular DJs, not only, I think, in L.A., but in the country? It was like a day in the life kind of thing?
We did. So two things. To answer your podcast question, we're already doing podcasts. I would say that we are dipping our toe in the water, and we have a partnership with Revolver to be able to distribute the podcasts that we're doing. And your second question or comment regarding the show that was Don Cheto al aire, which was the Don Cheto, the DJ talent started in L.A., is on our radio network today. Don Cheto did a show with his cast of characters that he does the morning show with. And it was incredibly successful. And I would say that what was interesting about that show was that it was actually probably more successful in AVOD than it was in linear. And I think that's part of the future model, too. I think we're going to see talent and personalities that get articulated in content even more so. But I also think that we're going to continue to see that we're going to produce, as an industry, more and more content for AVOD, for FAST, that eventually that actually gets repurposed in broadcast, where the legacy thinking has been the opposite. Produce for broadcast, and we repurpose in other media. I think it's going to start flipping, particularly as that's where we see viewing go.
If you want to know more about Steve's company, Estrella Media, and all the different services it does, both television and audio, here's where you go online, estrellamedia.com. Estrella, that's E-S-T-R-E-L-L-A, media.com. Steve, thank you very much for making time before your Memorial Day weekend and your reach to New York to be with us. It's been a pleasure. All the way. We've got to do that back soon. We definitely want to have, when you're ready to launch the new 8 to 10 live two-hour programming block, we'd love to have the producers on to talk more about it. It's been a great pleasure all the way, Steve. Have a wonderful holiday weekend with you and everybody you see.
Thank you, Simon. It's a pleasure. I always learn from talking to you. Thank you.
Same here, Steve. You're very, very welcome. Take care. All the greatest.
Bye-bye.
Steve Mandela, Chief Revenue and Local Media Officer for Estrella Media, joining us live en route from Connecticut to New Weber York. We're going to go a little over time than we normally do. We usually do an hour, sometimes 90 minutes. We're going to just do one more thing. That's our classic trivia question of the week. So here's the question, and if you're first with the correct answer, you'll win a bunch of prizes, including a Starbucks rewards card from the BBC, from Canela Media, particularly Canela Kids, their wonderful new coloring book based on their hit new animated tune, Super Ellis, which has been renewed for a second season, crayons to go along with it, and the brand new book, Sons of Baseball, by former U.S. Network and Madison Square Garden Network publicist Mark Pratt, who was on our show a couple of weeks ago to talk about this venture, and he is doing great with it. Got wonderful reviews, published by Rowan at Littlefield. And here's the question you can win all those prizes with. So perk up. Here it is. Name the family that hired the nanny on the popular CBS 1990s sitcom The Nanny, starring Fran Drescher. Name the family, the name of the family that hired the nanny on The Nanny. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Make sure you enclose your name and your mailing address. And if you first predict the correct answer, you win. If we don't get a winner by the end today, post the question tomorrow morning. Yes, we will tomorrow morning, Saturday, on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. That's Facebook at Simon Applebaum and Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. One more time, the question, name the family who hired the nanny on The Nanny. Know the answer. Get that answer in. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. If you're a previous winner or you're a previous guest of this program, you are not eligible. So, how about you becoming a winner this Memorial Day weekend or before? You can do it right now. Do so, and all the very best. Thanks to our wonderful guests for being on the program today, Lloyd Carroll from the Queen's Chronicle and Steve Mandel from Estrella Media. Remember, we'll be with you after Memorial Day weekend on Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. Coming away on Tuesday, among our guests, Samantha and Jeffrey Drucker, who are doing a video podcast series now running on smart TV sets and devices around the nation. And that project is also now running as a late-night show on Optimum, the cable system here in New York, owned by Altice. And then coming away on Friday, among our guests, Jeff Nelson, the co-founder and chief operating officer of Blavity. That's the organization that includes Blavity TV. If you came in late on today's episode, want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to that homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out our programming also on our website over the holiday weekend, tomorrowbetelevised.com, at tomorrowbetelevised.com. And don't forget, we're available on 16 podcast sites around the country, from Podvine to Spotify, iTunes, Apple and Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and our three newest sites, podbay.fm, Podchaser, and Pod Paradise. Love hearing from you. What do you think about our guests and our content today? What's your thoughts about where TV is at and where it's going, in English, Spanish, or other languages? Love to hear. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on social media at Facebook and LinkedIn at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWT. Whatever you have to say, we respond to within 24 hours. That's our promise to you, because what you say matters more than ever. The views expressed are those of the participants. They are not say those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Andy Toe is BTR's general manager. Dave Feinberg is head of content. Website services are provided by On Podium, the internet's great podcast outpost. Guitar Vegas is our web coordinator. But tomorrow we televise. I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. All of us at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, our website, tomorrowwetelevise.com, all of our podcast platform affiliates, we thank you for your listening. We hope you have a magnificent Memorial Day weekend. Spend it great with people you love. Enjoy the barbecue, the baseball, the sports happening all over the weekend. And remember, take time over the course of the weekend to remember the people who made the ultimate sacrifice so we could have the nation and the world we all want and share. We'll be back on Tuesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tune Radio, and all of our podcasts and web destinations. Whatever you're doing between now and then, weekend included, please make it safe and make it great for you and others you love so much. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.